On this edition of Weather Brains, severe weather pounds the nation and Alabama.
That was probably our biggest spring event in years here.
On US 43, just south of Winfield, there was some trees down, and as a result, I think there may have been a short tornado track in there.
Also, how good of a job do radio stations do covering severe weather?
I find it appalling that so many of them during tornado warnings don't do anything.
Plus, going back after Katrina.
The damage is total. You get the feeling that there's just nothing left.
One Weather Brains member revisits South Mississippi.
It was a very moving experience to go back.
You'll hear what Bill Murray saw and experienced. That and much more coming up. Welcome to Weather Brains, the podcast that's all about weather, produced by the weather geeks of the Weather Company. I'm David Black in Birmingham, Alabama, saying hello to James Spann, Brian Peters, and J.B. Elliott. Mr. Spann, how are you this time?
Mr. Black, I'm doing great. How are you?
I am superb, and I'm glad that you and everybody else made it through the severe weather event that pounded the Southeast and other parts of the country, for that matter, this week. Also, hello to Mr. Peters. What have you to say for yourself?
Good evening, David. I can say that after Monday, I think the adrenaline has finally left my bloodstream.
Man, I hear that. J.B. Elliott, you were a pretty busy person, too, with all the severe weather that pounded the Southeast. How are you?
About 3.5 hours on radio continuously. I'm fine, Mr. Guys. I am rested now, and my blood is not even matriculating. I'm about to go to sleep.
You guys really had a quite a long ordeal. James, what are your thoughts on the severe weather event that hit us? And really, I guess in some ways we should be somewhat thankful because some folks got it worse than we did.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt that the big story was the outbreak out there across the nation's breadbasket, the storms that hit Kansas and Missouri. I don't know the final death toll. I think it was 10, JB, is that right?
Last I heard was 10. One of the most amazing facts about that system was that virtually every block of Springfield, Illinois, had some damage.
Yeah, I mean, we were all sitting here watching those thunderstorms on radar from a distance. And, of course, most of us are down here in the southeastern states in Alabama. And, you know, just amazing to watch. And Lawrence, Kansas took a pretty good hit, and many other communities. And as always, after a tornado tragedy, to me, the real story, it's not the number, you know, 10 deaths. It's learning who these people are. You know, you look down the names, some of those that died. I see a man and his wife in their 40s. They died when a tornado took their pickup truck and pushed that into a propane tank on a rural highway in Perry County, Illinois, south of St. Louis, or south in Missouri. And then you see others that these are grandmamas and granddaddies and parents. And it's always tragic to see the funerals and to learn more about the people that died. And I think I can speak for all of us. That's a real motivating factor for part of working these strange hours and doing this odd job. It's to try and help prevent this loss of life when this stuff happens.
Would you guys say it was a little bit of a surprise as far as the severe weather that developed? Because I think that at one point it was thought that we might not catch that much action here in the Southeast in Alabama, but you guys were on the air for hours and hours on end because of the threat of tornadoes.
Yeah, I think it was a surprise for the event we dealt with on Monday, at least in my opinion, for the Kansas-Missouri stuff. That was expected. In fact, there was a high risk out, and you know, there was excellent preparation, I think, and warning for all that. But I can't speak for these other guys. I was expecting a few severe thunderstorm warnings and maybe a tornado warning up in the far northern part of our state in Alabama. But that was a rock and roll night, Brian. You were right in the middle of it.
Yes, came as close as I think I've come so far working for you, James, in catching. Well, I caught one supercell, just happened to be out of position. Bill Castle had already got the live truck set up, unfortunately, at Winfield, and we couldn't take it down. So we were in a little bit of a bad position. We were on the north side of that supercell. If we'd been a little further south where I blew the tire, I think we might have been in better position to actually have seen or had the potential for seeing one of the small tornadoes that probably came out of that thunderstorm, because I understand on US 43, just south of Winfield, there was some trees down, and as a result, I think there may have been a short tornado track in there.
Yeah, David, let me explain how this works for people that are not in this market. I am the lead meteorologist for the ABC affiliate in Birmingham, Brian, his role in the operation in severe weather events is often to go out in the field. And so he was sharing his experiences in our storm chaser van out there in the weather. And J.B. Elliott, his role during severe weather is doing radio. And J.B. was on multiple radio stations in Birmingham. And so we all play different roles during these severe weather outbreaks. And really, David, that was probably our biggest spring event in years here. So I don't know about these other guys. I'm a little rusty. I haven't done this in a while.
And it was a very clear-cut event, too, James, with those dual supercells coming out of Mississippi. I mean, it turns out they didn't produce any long-track tornadoes, and they didn't produce anything more than, I think at most, maybe an F1. I think everything I've seen so far has been rated an F0.
Yeah, and I don't believe we really expected any powerful tornadoes with this system. But I'm like James. I'm surprised at the number of warnings. I really am.
When you stayed on television for about, I guess, 4 or 5 hours, David, it was and this is an aggressive weather market for the people that are not from the Birmingham market that listen to this. And I've gotten a lot of email from different parts of the country from people that listen. Whenever there's any county in our DMA or designated market area under a tornado warning, we go on the air and stay on the air. Doesn't matter what's on television. And we were on the air from about 3:45 until 7:30 Monday night. And quite frankly, I was not expecting that. So a long answer to your question, David, no, I didn't think it'd be that wild here.
Do you feel like the any of the computer models in particular did a better job handling what ultimately happened compared to what it looked like earlier on?
Well, you know, I guess it's easy to blame computer models. Anytime something goes wrong in a forecast, I blame myself, really. I mean, for, you know, common sense would dictate when it's 85 degrees in early March, you're going to have some problems. And oftentimes we forget to look at some of the basics, and maybe we ought to go back to that. But I think all the models were really hinting that the main dynamics are going to be pretty far north, and the instability was better this time. But that just goes to show you, even when your dynamics are pretty far removed, you can have some pretty wild weather down this way.
When I was looking at the sounding in the morning, James, you know, one of the things we had is we had a very strong cap on the order of about 3 degrees, I think it was, as I remember. So that cap, you know, may have helped intensify things a little bit, because when the cap broke, maybe that's what helped develop those supercells, even though they didn't have that strong a dynamics to go with them. But we sure had some juicy air underneath, near the surface, that we didn't have in the previous event.
Yeah, just imagine if we would have had that air mass in the event prior to that, that would have been rough stuff. So that was quite a day. And I was going to ask JB, you know, radio plays a crucial role in the warning process, and I just wanted to hear from JB how his day went. When I get on television, I don't know anything else. You know, I am locked in doing, you know, 4 or 5 hours on television. How'd the radio coverage go, JB?
It went real well. We had all four stations, all four downtown Cox radio stations hooked together. Of course, two of those 100,000-watt FM stations, and so we were getting calls all the way from western Georgia to eastern Mississippi. They opened it up for calls. We invite calls from people in the affected areas and let them tell us what kind of weather they're having if they're in the thunderstorm area. But we also get quite a few calls, and we've started doing this, from people traveling through the state that are not familiar with the state geographically. About every 15 minutes, we go up and down the interstates and describe the weather, like weather along the highway feature. And also we had some calls from, I believe we had a call from a family from Michigan that were traveling through that had no idea where the counties were. And we explained to them, they were coming south from Huntsville toward Cullman, and we explained to them where the thunderstorms were in relation to them, and that helps them a lot.
In the Storm Chaser, Bill Castle and I were vectored up to the Arkadelphia exit, you know, in southern Cullman County there. And we pulled in for gas, trying to find the damage that had been reported. It turns out there was like one tree down. But anyway, we were absolutely swamped with, I'd say, 6 or 8 or 10 people who were in that gas station and had stopped there because they were unsure about the weather, and they were traveling either south or north on I-65. And I actually showed them the radar and the storm chaser on my laptop, and the people who were headed north, they got in their cars and headed north because it was clear sailing going north, and the ones that were going south all agreed that my advice of staying put for a good half hour, 45 minutes was a good idea.
Right. We had at least two calls from refugees from the Hurricane Katrina area who did not know where they were in relation to anything.
Yeah. I think it's absolutely crucial that radio do what these Cox radio stations in Birmingham are doing. And I find it appalling that a lot of radio stations, and I'll just fuss at radio, and I came from radio. I love radio. It's in my blood. But in this new age of radio stations with these corporate owners and they own all the stations, so many of them during tornado warnings don't do anything. You turn on a radio station and they're doing the same thing. You know, we play 190 minutes of music in a row, blah, 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 blah. Well, who cares about, 180 songs in a row when you've got a tornado on the ground, an immediate life threat to, to people, and you got folks driving and they can't get weather information. So I applaud Cox Radio in Birmingham for doing what they do, and I encourage other radio stations to get on the bandwagon, because I assure you nobody's going to be listening to 187 in a row when you've got tornadoes flying.
According to their CEO, David DeBose, they're going to beef up the situation and even post a call screener so the calls can be screened and make it work more smoothly. And they're really going gung-ho.
And, I guess some of these broadcasters are afraid of somebody complaining that their song was cut off or some, radio show was cut off. But look, it works that way in television. We're always going to get some, few little hate mail things that come in. But are you going to, satisfy an audience of 1 million people and give them the information they really need to know? Or are you going to pander to 5 or 6 people that get mad because they can't watch the program? There is a hunger for this. During our live long-form coverage, David, our rating peaked at 26.5 and the share peaked at 35. Nobody does numbers like that anymore in television. It's just staggering. And that shows you the hunger that's out there that people have for information when there's dangerous weather around. So, again, I encourage radio stations to get on board and do what JB's doing.
And so many people are listening in their automobiles, traveling through.
James, you bring up something else I wanted to ask about, and that is you guys at ABC 3340 are so proactive with your coverage on the Internet. How much traffic does your web blog get sometimes during severe weather? Any statistics that you could tell us about there?
Yeah, during most active days, we have over 50,000 unique IP addresses. And, of course, that equates, in theory, to 50,000 unique viewers watching the blog, and that's staggering to me. And one of the things that we just added is live streaming. We stream our video coverage on our website now. If you go to abc3340.com and go to weather and click on the little streaming icon, we're there. And I was astounded by the number of emails I received after this event Monday. And usually I get a lot from local people, but now instead of getting them from just local people, they're coming from all over the country. And I probably had 500 emails. And that, it's blowing my imagination. So the Internet is playing more and more of a role in disseminating severe weather information. And the JB and Bill Murray are just great on that blog during bad weather.
I think part of the success that you guys have is just the working relationship that everybody has. I guess it kind of sounds maybe corny to use this word, but there really does seem to be a synergy with all of the weather team members to make this information flow work.
Well, we're all different, and we have different strengths and different weaknesses, and you have to play to your strengths whenever you're doing weather like this. And I think we've got people in a position to do that now. And Brian's work in the field is just astounding. You imagine this guy. He's trained over 6,000 spotters during his days at the Weather Service, and now we've got him out there looking for bad weather. I mean, he's the guy. And Brian, your work is just astounding. And for the people that aren't in this market, Brian, he mentioned this, but he had a pretty wild experience. He had a blowout. One of the tires blew in the storm chaser van. Tell us about that deal, Brian.
Well, it sure scared the devil out of me. I think the adrenaline was really pumping after that, driving along trying to meet up with the live truck, which had originally been scheduled to go to Hamilton, and it was obvious from radar that that wasn't the place to go, and we rerouted to Winfield, just headed up State Road 13 just east of Fayette and Fayette County, And all of a sudden, just hear this loud noise and then this kind of flap, 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 flap thing, except it was much louder than that. And boy, did my heart start pounding. I mean, I knew immediately what had happened. But fortunately, even though I've never had a blowout before, I knew not to hit the brakes hard. And I just had both hands on the steering wheel and managed to pull off to the side of the road. And boy, I've got to say something for people in Alabama. I know how to change a tire, but getting the tire out of the chaser from underneath, you know, it's one of those that fits underneath from behind, and we've got this desk in there and television monitors and everything, and I couldn't figure out how to get the tire down. I had two men who stopped, Gary White and Tyrone Oswalt, and they are absolute guardian angels because we had a hard time getting the lug nuts off the chaser, and Gary had a 4-foot bar that we put on his socket set, and were able to break those lug nuts loose. And I shredded that tire. I mean, that tire, there was no way you were going to do anything, patch anything. It was shredded. And we managed to get it jacked up and get that tire off. And then Tyrone knew how to get the tire out of the van. He drives a public transportation van there in Fayette County. So between those two gentlemen, it was one of them. And then we get the spare on, and we lower the van. And Gary says, you know, there's a gas station up the road just a ways, and you better put some air in that spare. It wasn't way down, but, it, you know, it was obvious that it needed some air. And Tyrone said, well, no problem. And he opens the back of his van and pulls out an air tank.
That's amazing.
Wow. Amazing. I swear, when I left that spot, I said a couple of very thankful prayers and blessed those two guys. And Gary said something to me. I offered him money. You know, I mean, I, what could I do? I wanted to thank him. I was so grateful. And Gary said, oh, I couldn't accept a thing. He says, I try to do something good for someone every day. And it's kind of like, wow. I mean, I feel like I was blessed. I mean, you don't think of a blowout as being a blessing, but I really feel like I was blessed meeting those two fellows.
Well, that's a great story.
Alabama takes a pounding sometimes, but you know what? There are people in this state who would give you the shirt off their back, and it sounds like you ran into two very fine folks out there, Brian.
I did. And, you know, I've gotten emails in the blog post I put out there. I wasn't sure if I spelled Tyrone's name right, and I got an email from a guy I know in Fayette. He said I spelled his name right. So I didn't want to insult him and get his name wrong or anything like that, but they were wonderful, wonderful people, and I would never have made it out of that storm area and if they hadn't helped when they did, and they're just wonderful.
Something else that I observed during this severe weather event, James, you may want to speak to this. You guys got some tremendous pictures submitted by viewers out in rural parts of the state. Tell me about that.
I'm telling you, David, that this is just great. I mean, the times are changing, and I love change. And to me, a big part of weather coverage is now it's citizen journalism. And in this case, we have people that are taking digital pictures and digital movies of severe thunderstorms, wall clouds, funnel clouds and tornadoes, and I have over 300 pictures from viewers from that event we had here Monday. I got some amazing tornado images from the far western part of our state, and many, many wall cloud images, and got some shelf cloud lightning shots, and you talk about a great way to show what's going on, and you know, it doesn't take but a second to pop that up on the air, so you can just show people, hey, this is what's going on right now, and that's a reminder this is serious business. So I think people, the average person on the street, will play a greater role in television weather coverage, and quite frankly, television news coverage. It works the same with news as well, but I can't thank those people enough for sending in those images, and we posted a lot of them on our blog. If you go to ABC3340.com and weather and blog and scroll down through the last couple of days, you'll see those. And we've also got Brian's picture of his blown out tire there. But that is a great thing, David. And I guess we need to plug the Skywarn program. I do note that so many of these people that sent in images had questions like, what is this? And they asked, you know, what is a wall cloud? What is an RFD? And so I really encourage anybody that has not been through Skywarn training that's listening to this podcast to get it. And I bet you my buddy Brian would second that since he used to teach that for a living.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I've been invited to teach a Skywarn spotter class in Chilton County. And I think I'm going to...
Everybody in Chilton County, run! Just kidding,
right.
Just kidding.
Yeah. I think I'll probably resurrect some spotter training because I've spoken with Jim Stefkovich, the meteorologist in charge of the Birmingham National Weather Service office, and Jim's philosophy is we can use all the help we can get. So may try to resurrect that, James.
Yeah, I think that's very important, and the more trained eyeballs we have out there, the better. And something that's very important to point out, and I think we probably said this in this podcast before, radar doesn't detect tornadoes. And I don't care what your local TV station says or what some promotion guy says, it doesn't. The radar beam is not on the ground. The radar beam can be anywhere from 2,000 to 10,000 feet or even higher, and we know that there's rotation within that beam aloft, but we don't know what's underneath that. And that plays a crucial role for spotters. JB, wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely, yes. Ham radio operators and spotters, absolutely essential.
And I want to plug the ham radio people, too. The Alabama Emergency Response Team, or ALERT, they're volunteers that go to equipment that's already at the National Weather Service in Birmingham. And as a matter of fact, there are systems or setups just like that at almost every National Weather Service office in the United States. It doesn't matter whether your Weather Service office has the main threat of tornadoes like we do down here, or snow like they do out in some of the Rocky Mountain states. They've all working with amateur radio, because one of the tenets of amateur radio is to provide public service, and this is a wonderful public service, and the amateurs have a tremendous job trying to communicate across the Birmingham National Weather Service's area, which is, I think at last count, I want to say it's 39 counties, and that's more than our DMA, right, James? Our DMA is what, 21?
It's a big area, and you guys know this. I got started in amateur radio doing this. I was a volunteer weather spotter when I was a kid, and that led to this career. And I've had a license. I was 14 years old. And anybody that gets into Skywarn on a really serious basis that really likes weather, you really need your ham license. It is a wonderful hobby. It's a matter of a simple multiple-choice exam. You don't have to know the Morse code anymore, and even the study guides are online. And it's a great thing. And, David, you're licensed, and you can testify to that, too.
75% of the ABC 3340 weather team is licensed. And I bet there's not another television station around that can boast that, James.
And we're going to work on young man Jason and see if we can get that up to 100%.
I wasn't going to mention his name.
But it is a valuable activity. James, I know you remember December 16th, 2000, when Tuscaloosa, Alabama, was hit by a tornado. You recall that, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, speaking of amateur radio, those guys were very active during that severe weather event. Just check this out.
Roger, do you have any injuries? I cannot confirm, but we have major, I repeat, major structural damage across the road from Eagle Baptist Church.
I've got debris in the air.
ER. Roger, we copy. We're trying to get you some help rolling that way now.
74KCQ, this is KC4 ER.
Hey, Chuck.
We need help down here past Eaglewood. I know y'all got people going everywhere, but we're trying to pull a couple guys out right now. I'm clear.
Do you have fire rescue on the scene?
Not yet. I've got a TPD south of here.
Give me your exact location, across the street or an address or something.
Okay, we got a rescue here. Give me the address again, sir.
105-66-0340.
That's not the exact address, but if you just come right below Eaglewood School, and it's on your, it's gonna be on your right.
Okay, Roger. Yeah, we sent rescue to you. I just wanted to confirm that was the same place.
When we realized the tornado had passed over the road we were on, we just immediately turned around and went back down toward where we knew there was going to be damage. And when we were the first ones on the scene, my partner and I got a guy that I do a lot of spotting with. He went one way to the cries of a lady that had been thrown out of a car, and I went the other way. Someone was flagging at us as we showed up, and when he saw us, he said, "Look, I got a lady over here that's in some rubble," and we pulled her husband out and another man, and unfortunately we weren't able to get her out. She was one of the ones that was deceased, and it was just unbelievable. I just couldn't really get a grasp of what I've seen. You know, I've been through three of these things, and it was just weird.
That is what amateur radio, in part, is all about. James, you and Brian have worked a lot with the amateur radio people in West Alabama.
Let me tell you what, that gives me chill bumps listening to that, David. That was a day that we won't forget. For those that don't know, that was an F-4 tornado that killed 11 people in the southern part of Tuscaloosa 9 days before Christmas in the year 2000. And we heard that same traffic here in our weather office. We monitor them and all the different Skywarn groups, and it absolutely gives me chill bumps that their reports were so good and let us know that this was a serious situation. And that's the 146.82 repeater in Tuscaloosa, and I grew up doing that same thing. And the fact that they are so much better at it now than we were. So, again, a big tip of the hat to those guys for their work down there. And, Brian, you remember that one too, don't you?
Oh, I certainly do. I also remember the April 8th, 1998 F5 tornado that started in extreme eastern Tuscaloosa County and moved into Jefferson County. And once again, reports from amateur radio were among the very first reports coming in. As a matter of fact, one of the amateur radio reports, David, I think it's a friend of yours, came from Mark Parmalee, as I remember.
Right. Sure did.
His house was actually physically damaged. I never could actually pin it down when I worked for the Weather Service here, but the Sheriff's Department and the amateur radio reports came in so close together, it's hard to say exactly which one, you know, was the very first report.
Mark told me later he spent that tornado in a bathroom sitting in a bathtub. They had they dragged a mattress from a bedroom in and were under the mattress. And I can only imagine the fear that must have been going through somebody having to do that.
Let me plug this ham radio website, David, for people that are interested. I know a lot of people are. It's ARRL dot, is it net, David? Or
ORG, I believe. ARRL dot ORG, I believe.
I think it's ORG.
Yeah, that's it. It's ARRL dot ORG. Go to that website. That's the National of Ham Radio, the American Radio Relay League. And click on about, learn about amateur radio there, and you can get all the nuts and bolts of getting your license. And it'll just be, if you want to be a Skywarn spotter, you got to do the ham thing.
And Brian, what's the website for folks who want to know more about Alert here in Alabama?
It's alert-alabama.org. And by the way, for people who might be listening, the next meeting for Alert is actually going to be, we meet the second Tuesday of the month, unless we change for, like, I think in February, we doubled with Valentine's Day, so we moved it forward one day. But the next meeting is April the 11th, and we're also going to be meeting at the National Weather Service office in the Shelby County Airport in Shelby County, of course, near Calera, or part of Calera now. And that meeting is going to involve training. So if you really are interested in learning more about it, even if you might not be an amateur radio operator, but you're interested in that, you know, your interests take you that way, this would be a great meeting to come to it. You get a little tour of the Weather Service and get to see what the hams do, and they'll do some training on some of the software they use for receiving warnings and watching radar.
Sounds good, and I'm sure that we will be talking more in the future about amateur radio operators. Guys, thought we might switch gears here for a couple of minutes and go from one type of devastating weather to another, and that is hurricanes. We are still talking about Hurricane Katrina nearly 7 months after it struck, and we no doubt will be talking about it for a long time.
Wash your mouth out, David. Hurricanes.
Absolutely. We've all heard
about hurricanes.
We've all heard the many stories about government's failure to be ready for the disaster, but there are some inspiring success stories that have come out of Katrina. Greg Surratt is an amateur radio operator living in Harvest, Alabama. He's one of the folks that James and Brian are talking about, active in emergency communications help. For 37 days, Surratt spent his time being part of the solution, not the problem. Surratt volunteered his time at a Red Cross facility in Montgomery, Alabama, helping coordinate the work of hundreds of fellow radio amateurs. On March 7th, Surratt addressed an FCC independent panel that was looking into Katrina's impact on communications networks. Surratt described for panel members how the hams use their skills and their capabilities to fill in for all of those disrupted communications systems. He talked about problems they encountered, and he had some suggestions on ways to fix them.
This was a great opportunity, speaking to the FCC panel, and it was very interesting. The panel and the presenters made up a very good cross-section of public safety, industry, volunteers, and it was a lot to take in over the 2 days. We heard a lot about operability of communication systems, interoperability, heard from several people that was down in, waiting in the water in New Orleans, trying to communicate to their coworkers and buddies in the area and out of the area, and they had no communications.
How would you describe the role amateur radio played post-Katrina?
I think amateur radio played a huge role. We sent a little over 200 amateurs through Montgomery through the Red Cross operation. I heard of and have seen reports of many other, a couple of hundred other hams helping various agencies. And as you know, we went in and set up communications where there were none, assisted other public service agencies with communications and people. The technical aspect of amateur radio really shone through, I think. We had amateurs that was fixing forklifts, repairing phone systems, antennas, repeaters, just lots of systems down there.
What sort of message did you have for FCC about amateur radio?
My message was mainly awareness of the amateur radio service, a message of what we did during Katrina to help out thousands of displaced people, public service agencies, the emergency management, all the different relief organizations.
Do you think the FCC views amateur radio with any higher level of importance at this point? Do you think that amateur radio has gotten some recognition for what you guys did?
Yeah, I really believe they do. I believe their awareness and their view of amateur radio has to be much greater, because in every panel during our meetings and discussions, amateur radio come up in a positive light. When other folks were given testimony from the health and medical folks, the industry folks, the topic of amateur radio being there, helping out, providing communications where there were none, came up several times. And we had amateurs that came down from all over the United States. We had two guys from Canada that came down. Credentialing was one of the major topics throughout the FCC meetings. We learned really quickly during Katrina that when amateurs come in from all over the U.S., when the event or disaster is widespread like it is, your local emergency management type credential doesn't always work when you go from one county to the next or one state to the next. And credentialing, especially a federally recognized or a well-known credential like an FCC credential, I think will help amateurs to be able to when requested, go into an area and be able to get in easily and be immediately recognized by the folks in the disaster area.
No doubt in your mind that amateur radio played a really valuable role this time.
Yes, amateur radio played a huge role this time.
Tell you what, guys, there are people who make it a point to advertise loudly all the good things they do for the world, and then there are people who don't say anything. They just go out and help other people in the world quietly, just like the guys who helped Brian with his blown tire. I think Greg Surratt and his folks fall into that group, too.
Yeah, Greg is the section manager for this Alabama section of the ARRL. He's got an important leadership position, and I've worked with Greg for a few years, helping him as the public information coordinator for the state, and he's got a servant's heart, and that guy's the real deal. So that's what ham radio is all about, people like him, and we need more. So, again, I hope some folks will kind of catch the bug with ham radio and check it out if they hear all this.
And show up at an alert meeting and give Brian a hard time.
And even back in the 50s and 60s, we depended heavily on the ham radio guys.
Let's welcome in Bill Murray of Weather Brains and the Weather Company. Bill, hello. Good to hear you. Where are you?
Well, David, I'm actually sitting in my easy chair tonight here
Whoa. Wait a minute. In Trustful, Alabama, you're not in Kansas City, Mo, or Chicago or somewhere?
No, I'm glad to be home tonight, I tell you what. So,
home has a special meaning for people like you who travel all the time, doesn't it?
That's exactly right.
We want to hear your story about Katrina, because in your business travels, you head everywhere, it seems, and one of the places you visited recently was the Mississippi Gulf Coast. And what were your experiences there? What kind of effect did seeing that have on you, and what did you see?
Well, it still gives me goosebumps, David, because on Saturday night, August 27th, Brian Peters and I, along with crews from ABC 3340, went to Biloxi, and they had assigned us to the Comfort Suites on Beach Boulevard. And I remember pulling up about midnight and looking across at the ocean less than 200 yards away. We were probably at 12 or 14 feet elevation. Looked at Brian and said, "We can't stay here tomorrow night." And he said, "Bill, you're absolutely right. And we got to hunt a better place tomorrow." Well, of course, there was no better place. And fortunately, we came back to Mobile that night. But, you know, what I wanted to do, David, was go back and see the place where we were. And so on a business trip to the Mississippi coast, because, you know, there's a lot of development going on. And I think that's the good news. You know, you hear so many terrible things about, you know, how the rebuilding is slow and the relief efforts have been, you know, poor. I was amazed at the spirit of the people of Mississippi and what's going on there now. I think the coast will come back better than ever. So I was at least encouraged to see that. But I got off and went through Biloxi and turned down Beach Boulevard and, you know, looking for this hotel that we stayed at. And I tell you, when I stopped the car and got out and looked at it, I thought, you know, if we'd been there that night, we would have been dead, because the hotel was completely scoured clean. Only the you know, the cement walls were there. The interiors were completely washed away. And we had two second floor rooms there. You know, I could see the beach that morning, and it was a beautiful day. The sun was out. The cirrus clouds weren't even overhead yet. You know, it was just as pretty a morning as you'd ever expect. And of course, it went downhill very quickly, but it was a very moving experience to go back.
How widespread is the damage still at this point in time?
David, the damage is total, and it really gets worse as you go further west. Biloxi, you know, but you know, starting at Biloxi, and I didn't go back to the east, but from there back, you know, through Gulfport into Ocean Springs, Long Beach, the areas along the waterfront, really up to the railroad tracks, you know, because the CSX railroad runs there just north of the beach by about half a mile in most locations, and it almost formed its own little dike. And that's about where the surge line was all along the coast. But south of that surge line, the damage is total. You know, you would see maybe an occasional, you know, concrete structure that's still standing. But for most places, the only testament that it was even there is the sign might still be there. You know, literally, the building will be gone. And I know there's been a lot of cleanup and things since that time. But you get the feeling that there's just nothing left. I was encouraged to see the live oak trees. They're still there in great numbers. And, you know, you'll see a neighborhood that obviously was, you know, dozens of beautiful home sites. And literally the only testament that those homes were even there are the you know, the foundations and the beautiful trees, you know, that are stripped, but they're still there. And, you know, you might see a set of steps that go up to nothing. But I think the hopeful thing was that most of the time you saw an American flag behind it. You know, maybe somebody put up a nice sign, you know, compliments of, you know, maybe they've got a little, one of the house trailers that we see sitting on the railroad tracks here in Trustful a lot, you know, and they seem thankful to have that trailer. You know, I thought you might see a lot of bitter attitudes, but I didn't see any of that. One of the funny signs was one of those white travel trailers that, you know, when I saw one of these little, you know, white FEMA trailers that was sitting there, you know, a nice cheerful sign out front that said, "Leah and Chi-Chi's new pad." And it said, "Thank you, FEMA," with an exclamation point and a big heart. And I didn't think that was a cynical sign. I think they really meant that. So, you know, that made me feel, you know, like maybe, you know, that area's going to be back. It was interesting to see the old SS Hurricane Camille. David, have you ever seen that boat that survived Hurricane Camille washed up right off Highway 90?
Never have. Sounds fascinating.
In Gulfport, and it was kind of a souvenir tourist trap kind of thing, and it's still there, but it was battered. This hurricane, you know, put another double whammy on it, so a lot of people were stopping having their pictures taken with that. But you know, really, you know, through a lot of that area, you know, there's no street signs, there's no traffic lights, no infrastructure whatsoever.
When you see such devastation, is it hard to understand how people would feel optimistic about building back?
Well, yeah, you know, especially knowing that just this year we could get another one just like it. That's got to be discouraging. But I think this, you know, from people that we talked to, they said this is our home. You know, this is where we grew up. This is, you know, the place we love. And, you know, we'll build it back. We're just going to do it a little smarter maybe next time than last time. And hopefully that'll be true as they rebuild.
What was the most profound experience you had down there out of everything you saw and all the people you talked with? What really sticks out in your mind?
I think that when we, you know, I've always loved that section of the coast right there, just west of Biloxi with the lighthouse and Beauvoir, you know, the famous home of Jefferson Davis. And I remember, you know, getting right there where we did a lot of live shots, you know, and from on Sunday morning and Sunday afternoon before we left. And, you know, remembering back to how beautiful it was with big, gorgeous homes. And, you know, there's Beauvoir, which is this big, sprawling mansion, you know, that's literally down to this little square block that was, you know, a box that was all that was left. And, you know, all the side porches and everything were ripped away, and it was almost totally destroyed. So, yeah, you know, I think that, you know, really hit home to me that these were homes that withstood, you know, over 100 years of storms. And withstood what we thought was the worst storm possible, Hurricane Camille. You know, talked to people that said, you know, hey, we never saw water. We never thought on Biloxi Back Bay that we would have water, you know, into our home, because that was 24 feet. And it was 4 feet into our house. So, you know, that was 28 feet of water. And I can't imagine what those people went through that night. I went by the motel where I think 9 people died in, I want to say Bay St. Louis.
Right.
9 people died in sort of a, you know, a transient type little motel. And I'd read a story in the Biloxi newspaper about that a few weeks ago when I went by there. You know, it's hard to imagine that in this day and age of preparation and warnings and, you know, all the things we do to try to get the story out, that, you know, still well over 1,000 people died in this disaster. That's unbelievable to me.
It sounds like it really was an emotional experience to go and see that, even at this point in time, 7 months almost after it all hit.
Yeah, I had dinner with you know, some developers there in Biloxi, and you know, they're very excited about the future and everything. But you know, when you get them talking about what happened that morning, they get real emotional. We ate at I can't remember the name of the restaurant there in Biloxi that's so famous. Built in the 1700s, I think even. And, you know, it had 6 feet of water in it. And, of course, they've reopened now and, you know, back up and running. But, you know, you really see, you know, the economic engine that is that, you know, economy of gaming. You know, you can see the areas where the casinos are and things like that. Things are already cleaned up, back up and running. You know, they might still be under construction. But you can see that economic driver driving the coast down there.
But from what you did see, it's obvious to you, though, that it's still going to be many years for a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no question. The federal government has established something called the GO Zone, the Gulf Opportunity Zone. And they've really made it very financially lucrative for developers to go back in there and build, you know, the infrastructure that needs to be there, the shopping, the apartments, the hotels and all those sorts of things. So, I think that economic engine is gonna drive the redevelopment of the Mississippi coast, and I think it'll be better than ever. But it's gonna take 2 or 3 years before that happens.
Great story, Bill. Thanks. All right. Anything else we want to include before we wrap up, guys?
I'm gonna try and get a nap sometime this week. you ever had one of those weeks where you just don't have time to even think about taking a nap or eating or anything else?
You don't even think about dinner, do you?
When you have a severe weather day, it just seems to foul everything up. And we had it on Monday this week, so here we are at midweek trying to play catch-up. But I'll get there. And, you know, if that's all I got to gripe about, I got no gripe. So it's
dominoes,
a good week.
Like dominoes, huh, James?
Yeah, that's right. Once one thing kind of gets fouled up, the whole schedule gets fouled up. And I want to thank Brian. He stepped in and filled in for a couple of school programs for me, which was just invaluable. I can't leave when the weather's even on the verge of becoming bad. So Brian has stepped in, and JB, as always, he takes care of the facts and the blog and all these things. It's all about teamwork. So it's been a good week, and so I think it's going to be an active spring, but it'll be okay. We'll be fine.
Well, like
and
I said,
the injustice of it all is I got 2 cakes for James, and I didn't get a bite of either one of them.
There is no justice in the world,
no.
But there is synergy with you guys. Like I said before, you do a great job, and people really do appreciate it.
Well, I am very humbled by the ratings. Again, I look at that and it scares me to death. I try not to think about it, but during the peak of that coverage, and I'm, this is not a brag, but what I'm trying to say here, David, is how there's a hunger for this. And maybe somebody with another television station in some other market is listening to us. If you get out there and do aggressive severe weather coverage and you're the first in the market to do that, you'll reap some amazing rewards. But that night we peaked at this 26.5 rating. At the same time, the other two channels doing weather combined only had an 18. That's, you know, two together. So it's a teamwork thing, and there's a real hunger for that. And I encourage all media that are listening to get involved in doing severe weather like we do.
Well, I think most of the TV channels were all on one station those nights, obviously, from that. If you'd like to contact us here at Weather Brains, we would love to hear from you. Our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. So let us hear from you. James, good to hear you. JB, take care of yourself. Brian, don't blow any more tires, okay?
I'll try not.
I think JB's sucking down one of those. JB's sucking down a Buffalo Rock, aren't you, JB?
For a donut. I'm drinking a cup of coffee.
You didn't sneak a donut now, did you?
I wish I had a Buffalo Rock. No, I did not eat a donut. I only ate two donuts in Starkville. Four donuts.
I was about to say, don't lie now, JB.
Yeah, we're proud of you if that's true.
I had four donuts in Starkville, contrary to propaganda that was put out by you-know-who.
All right. All right. For James Spann, JB Elliott, Brian Peters, and Bill Murray, I'm David Black. On behalf of the Weather Company from Birmingham, Alabama, Weather Brains is copyright 2006. All rights reserved. We'll see you next time.